The government shutdown has left thousands of federal employees either unpaid or on furlough. A second missed paycheck tomorrow could put families in a financial crisis. It's bringing to light just how many people, employed by the government or not, live paycheck to paycheck. We're looking at middle-class financial realities here on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Chir-Kent. In 2017, the job site Career Builder did a survey and found 78% of U.S. workers are living paycheck to paycheck. Are you? We're at 800-642-1234. What are some of the expenses that keep you from getting ahead? Is it the monthly mortgage or rent? Is it childcare, perhaps caring for a sick parent? And that can be expensive. Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is an associate professor of human development and family studies at UW's School of Human Ecology. She co-authored the book, It's Not Like I'm Poor, How Working Families Make Ends Meet in a Post-Welfare World. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Taking a look at that 78% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, what is putting so many people in that situation?
I think, as you said in the introduction, there are so many expenses that families face today, and so many of those can feel non-negotiable. You have to have your kids in daycare so that you can work. If you have a sick relative, you have to take care of family. You have to have a place to live, and you have to, you know, put gas in the car to get from here to there. So there are a lot of expenses families face. And I think on the other side of things, work can often offer a lot of instability. We're seeing that with the furloughed federal workers now, but for a lot of families, that happens on a regular basis. They might not get the hours they were expecting, they might lose a shift, and then all of a sudden your paycheck's a little less than you were expecting, and it makes it that much harder to cover the bills.
What about being asset poor, and what is asset poor?
So asset poor, asset poverty, is really different than income poverty, and it's not talked about nearly as much. It means that you don't have enough resources to cover 3 months of most basic expenses without that paycheck coming in. And for a large proportion of American families, that's the reality. It's nearly half of American families, according to a Federal Reserve study from last year, can't cover even $400 without having to sell something or, otherwise borrow money in order to cover an expense as small as $400. So a lot of families are really unable to go beyond just spending what they expect to spend every month and have that paycheck try to stretch to cover those costs.
And when you think of selling off an asset, what might that asset be? Perhaps it's a car, but a lot of people are very far away from even owning a home.
Yeah, so it's usually not something, if you're trying to cover a $400 expense, we're often not talking about selling a car or a home, but, maybe something smaller, maybe that, special ring that your grandmother gave you or something like that. Choosing not to make a purchase that you might otherwise have made, maybe avoiding buying that new pair of shoes and letting your toe hang through the shoe for a week or two before the next paycheck comes in.
And when you say income poor, what do you mean by income poor?
So there's an official federal definition of poverty that has to do with how much your earned income is every year. And if it falls below the official federal poverty line, which for an individual is around $12,000, for a family of four, we're talking around $25,000. If your income for the year falls below that level, that classifies you as income poor. And there are many people who are not income poor, whose incomes are far above that federal poverty line, who are nevertheless asset poor, who aren't able to have enough in savings that they can carry themselves without relying on a paycheck for that immediate month.
Help us put a face on this. Who are these Americans who are scraping by, and what are the jobs they're working that are putting them in a situation where they can't live paycheck to paycheck?
They're really all of us. So there's not a them. It's us. so many people are working jobs where they can cover their bills for now, but without that paycheck, they are up the creek without the paddle. People are teachers, people are working hourly wage jobs. People are, as we're seeing among the federal workers, working jobs that they thought were going to be really secure government jobs and were willing to even take a pay cut in order to have the security of a government job that is just not there.
We're talking with Sarah Halpern-Meekin. She's an associate professor of human development and family studies at UW's School of Human Ecology. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think is the solution here? What would you need to get ahead? An income boost, more affordable child care, fewer health care costs? What do you think are some policy changes that could put a dent in the issue? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sarah, let's take a look at childcare for a moment. How much of a burden does this put on parents? And have you seen any policy making on the horizon that could impact the costs of childcare?
The costs of childcare for anyone with a young child is often astronomical. In a lot of states, the cost of high-quality childcare exceeds the cost of a public in-state college tuition. And when we're looking at that, you hear all the time about student loans and student debt and there being a crisis there, and there certainly is. But that really ignores what's happening in the early years of the lifespan for children, which is they need to be in high-quality childcare for their own development, and their parents need them someplace safe so that they can go to work and not be distracted by worries over how their child's doing. And so those costs of childcare, you often get what you pay for. Really inexpensive childcare might leave you feeling worried, might not be the best environment for your child. And so those costs for families are just enormous.
I recall there was an interview we had here on the Ideas Network with an author from San Francisco who wrote about childcare and said that in San Francisco, they wouldn't even put a price tag. You couldn't see prices before you went to tour, and they would give you a pricing after the tour, but they wouldn't even put prices on their website or anything like that. And it struck me as pretty alarming there, that not being even forthright with how much this could actually cost.
Yeah, I mean, San Francisco is truly exceptional in its costs. I think most of us would run screaming from any of the costs they would list for housing or childcare or anything like that. But even here in Wisconsin, the costs of childcare are not inexpensive, and it's a large burden on families to try to cover or to make the decision that a parent is not going to go to work and give up those earnings, because it just doesn't pay to have most of your paycheck going to pay for childcare.
Have we seen that, though? Have we seen a parent holding back more? Is there a trend toward that or not? Or both parents in the workforce and just doing what they can?
There's certainly not a large trend toward that. A lot of families don't feel like they can afford to do that. And for, it would oftentimes be a woman, a mom who would be withdrawing from the labor force. And that can be devastating to her career and her future earnings as well. So there's the short versus long term there families have to consider.
Talking with Sarah Halpern-Meekin. She is our guide. She's an associate professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. Talking about the realities of living paycheck to paycheck, what the research is telling us as well. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What keeps you from getting ahead? What would you need to change that? What is the impact to you during this partial government shutdown? Join the conversation. We'll get back to it in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about living paycheck to paycheck here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Brookings Institution is looking at the financial hit this shutdown is having on the middle class, and they're writing about how financial institutions are surprisingly ill-equipped with reasonable products to help families handle short-term, small-dollar credit needs. And families who overspend on their debit card are hit with a $35 overdraft fee, and this adds up. Americans overdraft to the tune of $24 billion a year. Did you overdraft recently? Did you see it coming, or was it caused by an unexpected expense like a car repair or a doctor bill? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah Halpern-Meekin stays with us. She is an associate professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. We've been talking about childcare, but there's also the expense associated with caring for an adult or an aging parent. How can caring for a parent or another adult weigh a person's finances down?
More and more people are in that position, right, are in this sandwich generation of even covering those childcare costs at the same time that they're caring for an older relative. And that can mean trade-offs again, right? Either paying for care so that you can go to work or stepping back from work to some extent so that you can do the care yourself. And so it's a lot of, you know, any care work involves a lot of the same trade-offs. Do you pay to get some assistance, or are you going to give up pay so that you can do that care work yourself? And a lot of families feel stuck in that decision.
What is the emotional toll of living life knowing that if an emergency strikes, you wouldn't have the funds to recover from it? How can that affect people?
So I think there's first the stress, right? The worry, the wonder, feeling like, you know, there's no plan B, that if plan A doesn't work out, things are not going to go well. That can be really stressful for people. And then if things don't go well, right, if, you know, that paycheck doesn't come through, if you lose a few hours, you're immediately in a position where you're just trying to keep your head above water. That can be really stressful on parents. That can make it a lot harder for them to be engaging with their kids in the ways that they'd like to. And it naturally leads to worries about what kind of parent am I being? Am I able to really fulfill the obligations I have to my kids, to my older parents, the way that I want to? So many families are worried about whether their kids will do as well as they did. And we're seeing more and more that's not the case. Fewer and fewer children do as well financially as their parents did before them. And so families face very real concerns about what sort of life they can give to their children when they get to be grown-ups.
In the shutdown, it is exposing just how fragile financial situations are among families. And there's this hashtag shutdown stories. It started trending after U.S. Representative Scott Perry said, quote, "Who's living that they're not going to make it to the next paycheck?" So there seems to be an assumption, perhaps a disconnect, that people should have that nest egg saved up in case of an emergency. But how much is this about personal responsibility versus circumstances that are out of control of that person?
So people certainly can make, different sets of decisions about their purchases and their finance, and can try to make choices about saving. But I think what's really important to keep in mind is the context in which people make those choices, right? So as we were talking about before, if you decide you're going to pay a lot less for childcare and then put that money away in savings, what is the cost to your child, to your family, to your sanity as you worry about whether your kid has just been parked in front of a TV for 8 hours, right? So families face very real choices that are not just, should I go on a Caribbean vacation or should I save? They're facing really hard trade-offs. And the other thing to keep in mind is, in order to save, you have to have some predictability. And for a lot of families, there isn't predictability in their earnings. In that Federal Reserve report I mentioned earlier, nearly a third of families said that they faced large income fluctuations from month to month. How do you do savings and financial planning when you don't know what your income is going to be? And also, we've seen in our research that a large proportion of working families face income shocks, you know, that car repair you didn't expect to have to make, the furnace breaking that you didn't expect to have to cover. And so saving for the rainy day that you don't know is going to happen, you can do that, but that rainy day comes often when the car breaks and when the furnace needs to be fixed, and then that savings is gone. So it's not as simple as, you know, socking it away in a Roth IRA and just sitting back and letting the money roll in.
So Wisconsin's minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, but there have been movements to bump that up across the country. Could raising the minimum wage be a solution here for Americans living paycheck to paycheck, or is it bigger than that?
I think it's really bigger than that. As we were talking about, this is not an issue that just applies to the lowest income family. You know, if somebody is working full-time, full year at minimum wage, they're bringing in about $15,000 a year. We're talking about families who are earning double, triple, quadruple that, who are really facing these tough issues about living paycheck to paycheck. And so raising the minimum wage can be an important policy discussion, but I think it doesn't go terribly far in addressing the real financial needs that a lot of families who are earning well above minimum wage face.
Let's take a moment to look at the earned income tax credit. The government shutdown could delay that tax refund. In the past, you vouched for a policy that was introduced in the Senate in 2016 that would have allowed tax filers to save a portion of their refund for an emergency later in the year. It didn't make it out of committee, but are policies like this part of a solution for low-income Americans?
We were hoping that there would be some thought about how we can build ways to make saving easier for people. Not just low-income Americans, but a lot of Americans get a refund check at tax time because we've overpaid or because we are eligible for, you know, the earned income tax credit or the child tax credit. And that means that we have a little bit of financial leeway at tax time in a way that we often don't for most of the rest of the year. And so the idea is to make it a little easier for people to engage in savings where they don't have to get that money and then disperse it themselves, but they can check a box when they're filing their taxes and say, hold on to that for me for later.
Looking back 50 years or so, how have changes to the structure of our American family impacted the way we make and spend money?
That's such an important question because our families look really different now than they did 50 years ago. We have a lot more single parent families. We have a lot more children living with grandparents who may be retired. And we have a lot more two income families where both parents are working. And what that means is that there is just a lot less to fall back on. So if a single parent loses his or her job, there's not another person who can pick up the slack in the household. In a two-income family, it's the same thing. If one person loses their job, the family's down half their income. It used to be the case oftentimes that in a two-parent family, only one of those parents was working. And if that parent lost a job, the second parent might be able to go get a job to help tide them over for the time being. So there's not somebody who can really just step up to the plate in a tough time because it's already all hands on deck.
Let's go to Greeley now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Greeley.
Good morning.
Good morning. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm a retired UW-trained physician and psychiatrist, and my question is quite simple. When will we have a culture that allows women to choose either not to have a child or to have one-child families?
Due to the expense of the cost of a child and bringing up a child?
Exactly.
Okay.
And you haven't mentioned what that cost is.
Greeley, we're short on time, and I want you to be able to respond to that, Sarah.
Yeah, so I think more and more people are making that choice. We've seen that the number of children that women have has been shrinking over time. Whether that's a cause for concern or a cause for celebration is an open question. But more women are choosing to have fewer children or no children. So we are seeing things go in that direction.
Yeah, New York Times reported that the amount of money parents spent on children is highest, not when they're under six, but when they're over 18 and into their mid-20s. Why is that?
I think there are really large expenses people face when they're going to college, when they're setting up their young adult lives. And oftentimes nowadays, parents are continuing to help children out with those costs.
And as we wrap up really quick here, what could be a step in the right direction?
I think in the short term, there are policies that could be put in place to address the current pressing needs of workers who are going without a paycheck, possibly that second paycheck tomorrow. But those are really just addressing the needs of one small group of people. We need to have a larger conversation about how to put more families in a position where covering costs is reasonable and where incomes are dependable.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Halpern-Meekin is an associate professor of human development and family studies at University of Wisconsin School of Human Ecology, UW-Madison. She co-authored the book, It's Not Like I'm Poor, How Working Families Make Ends Meet in a Post-Welfare World. Coming up next, we consider the shutdown's potential effects on Wisconsin's food share program and on food banks. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.